Tommy. They don't want anything from me. They're not trying to kill me, that I know of. Tonight's show felt like a 3-hour set. I was dripping toxic waste after one song, and all the blow and the booze and the gear was just pouring out of me. I didn't even have one drink on stage. God, I hate L.A. Or I guess I hate the people I attract in L.A. Market Square Arena, Indianapolis, Indiana. September 20th, 1987. Hotel, noon. Can't believe we're back in Indy just 2 months after we played here. Doc's greed is showing. There are so many Motley fans out there, but he just goes where the easy money is and doesn't help us build new fans in new cities or countries. Between you and me, I think we need a new manager. This guy doesn't like us. He just likes our money. He's never here or in the office. He's acting more like a record company every day. He does little of the work and takes all of the credit. He just throws it against the wall, and if it sticks, cool. If not, he blames us.
Alan Kovac. I have managed Motley Crue since the late 90s, and while I don't want to criticize their previous management, I do have the impression that they were just following the money. The trick is to maximize what you do in a city instead of going back to it multiple times. The advisors Motley had back then didn't explain the amount of work they had to bear, mentally and physically. They didn't consider that when artists get tired, they are likely to take sleeping pills or self-medicate with alcohol. Motley Crue was abused by the system. Their record label and representatives didn't explain how things worked. They just wanted them to stay on the treadmill.
September 22nd, 1987. Day off. Hotel, Tulsa, Oklahoma. 2:20 p.m. Rich Fisher decided to rent a helicopter and everybody's flying over to a restaurant to have a big dinner. I said I would go, but I know I won't. I can't face being social. I'd rather just stay here. I feel so uncomfortable in my skin. It's been creeping up on me for a few years. The bigger we get, the sadder I feel. P.S. I just called Bob Timmons, got his answering machine.
Bob Timmons. Nicky would call me sporadically during the girls' tour asking for help, but would never take it. He used to cover up his depression with anger. He felt that since now he was successful, people wanted to be around him, but they liked the fame, not him. So he self-medicated his pain through drug use. Motley Crue lived in an unreal world. I remember on an earlier tour being backstage with them and David Lee Roth and coming in and throwing an ounce of cocaine on the table and saying, "Hey guys, there you go." That was their attitude. We are rock stars, so this is what we do.
Tulsa Convention Center, Tulsa, Oklahoma, September 23rd, 1987. Hotel, 5 p.m. I feel fragile and tormented and uncomfortable in my skin. What happened when the heroin left is that the comfort left. I'm drinking more than I have in past tours to try to replace the comfort that smack gave me. I hate to admit it, but maybe I'm not even who I think I am. I'm feeling fragile and weak. I'm supposed to be on top of the world, and now I've started chipping again. Bob Timmons called back, but I wouldn't talk to him. Lloyd Noble Center, Norman, Oklahoma, September 24th, 1987, on the jet, 1 a.m. Tonight's show is hard work. We're sitting ready to take off for Dallas. Fred is pissed at me, even though he won't admit it, because before the show started, I hid in a road case by the side of the stage as the intro to The Stripper was playing. Fred was running around freaking out because he couldn't find me. He was overturning cases and screaming to cut the intro tape. I just jumped out just in time to start the show. When I looked over at the side of the stage, he was white as a ghost. I smirked, and he just shook his head.
Fred Saunders. Nicky was always doing shit like that. The bigger Motley Crue got, the cockier he got. He would always be dragging his feet and delaying things just because he could. Before the shows, the band would have what we called PCPs. Pre-concert piddles. And Tommy, Vince, and Mick would find a bathroom, but Nicky would just whip out his dick and piss wherever he was, in a corridor or on the side of the stage. He was quite the charmer.
Reunion Arena, Dallas, Texas. September 25th, 1987. Hotel, 1:45 p.m. Excited for the show tonight and tomorrow. I love Texas. I'm going to be good, maybe go to the gym and write some music. Off to the sound check. See you after the show. I'm not going out. Dallas equals trouble. Reunion Arena, Dallas, Texas. September 26, 1987. Hotel, 4:30 p.m. Last night was insane. It was another great show, as always. Dallas kicks ass. We stomped through out like a mechanical Godzilla or Cruzilla, then off to the best strip clubs in town. We had the girls piled on us, blonde, brunette, redheads, $100 bills were everywhere. I must have dropped $5,000 on my own. I'm sure we dropped $25,000 last night between us. Goddamn fun. As the night went on, the drinks flowed. I sort of lost my memory. I was trying to savor my zombie dust, but I think it got the best of me. Mick and Amy went to their room, of course, but Donna McDaniel came out with all of us. When I woke up, there were panties on my lamp and her shoes at the end of my bed. I remember her coming back to my room for a bump, but that's all I remember. God, I hope I didn't fuck her. Can you imagine if I did the very thing I'm busting mixed balls for? Chicks equal trouble. Off to the show. I am so hungover. Backstage, 7:30 p.m. Everybody's busting my chops, laughing, and asked if I fucked Donna. I saw her, and she just gave me a hug and said she had fun last night, but she didn't ask for her panties or shoes. What does that mean? Time to get on the war paint. We're spending the night in Dallas tonight, and I'm coming straight to my room after the show. 11:45 p.m. I pulled a runner tonight, straight off the stage, into the limo, then escorted right to my room. I'm watching a documentary on Hitler, Eva Braun, and their drug use. Okay, I get the hint. September 27th, 1987. Day off. Hotel, Dallas, 3:35 a.m. Just had a knock on the door. I looked through the peephole and saw two fucking gorgeous blondes. They said, "Hey, Nicky." And I said, "You have the wrong room." They started laughing and said, "Come on, Nicky, open the door. We know it's you." I said again, "You have the wrong room." And one of them said, "Oh, no, we don't. We were here last night with you, and I left my shoes." So I opened the door, and I said I was sick. They said, "Oh, well, we thought you might want to do a repeat of last night. We had a blast." I said I did, too, gave them the shoes and the panties, and told them if I wasn't sick, I'd love to hang out. And one of them said, "Thanks, those aren't my panties." And her girlfriend said they weren't hers either. Oh, Lord. 2:20 p.m. Flying out to Denver soon. Robin Crosby's coming out for a few days to visit. Then my grandfather's coming to Salt Lake City. Hotel, Denver, 10:45 p.m. Just got into the hotel. Nice hotel. There's a full spa downstairs. I'm going to take advantage of it. I asked Rich to get a doctor out. I need my monthly penicillin shot to ward off any drip that's brewing. Robin gets here tomorrow morning. We have adjoining rooms, just like the old days when we were roommates. Fuck, we had fun back then. Rat was just starting to get going, and Motley was on its way. We nicknamed him King because he's so big. Nobody could kick his ass, but I always tried. We used to go to this cafe by our house every day because we didn't have a refrigerator, and we'd talk for hours. I love him. He's been struggling with dope, but he says he's clean now, just drinking. Today's playlist was Aerosmith, Get Your Wings. Aerosmith, Draw the Line. Aerosmith's first album. Aerosmith rocks. Good night. Aerosmith was touring the Permanent Vacation album at the same time we were touring Girls, Girls, Girls. We would sometimes land at the same airport, but we never really saw each other, just each other's planes. One night, Steven and Joe left a note on the window of our plane, like a ticket you get on the window of a car when you park in the red zone. It told us that if we weren't careful, the way we were going, we would crash and burn the way they did. We all snickered at it, but it's interesting that I was too ashamed to write it in my diary, because they were right. P.S. I've never known which is funnier, Aerosmith writing Dude Looks Like a Lady about Vince, or Dire Straits writing Money for Nothing and Chicks for Free about Motley Crue. McNichols Arena, Denver, Colorado, September 28, 1987, hotel, noon. King's here. He was telling me horror stories about his band. Pretty much hates them. Blotzer's a fucking asshole all the time these days, and Piercy thinks he's such a rock star. Dude, you're a rat. You're not Steven Tyler or Jagger. I guess all bands are the same. It's so weird to see King has put on so much weight. He must have gained 50 pounds. I guess he really isn't doing drugs. Every time I quit drugs, I start to get fat. I always say I'm not sure which is worse, being a drug addict or being fat. On that note, time to order some food. McNichols Arena, Denver, Colorado, September 29, 1987. Hotel, 4:45 a.m. Tonight's show was really good. King said he was blown away at how tight we were. There were Denver's finest girls there. What is it about strippers and rock stars anyway? So we brought them back with us to the hotel. We rented another room under the name Just In Case and piled them all in there. Tommy and Vince came over. Tommy brought his blaster and I brought the music. And we had room service bring 8 bottles of champagne, 2 bottles of Jack, and a bunch of food. We all hung out, turned up the music, the girls danced for us, then everyone picked their girls, headed back to their rooms. Now the girls are gone, and I'm going to bed. Fun day. Safe and sane. 3 Motleys and 1 rat. P.S. King thought Whitesnake was great. He said, I'm just a fucking punk, and I don't like them because they can really play. I punched him in the neck, and he knocked me against the wall. Fucking hurt. And then we both started to laugh.
Fred Saunders. Nicky and Robin had a special camaraderie. They were both pretty big guys. Robin was 6'4", and when Motley and Rat were both starting out, they used to work the Hollywood club circuit together. They were also drug buddies and were always sneaking off together. They were competitive, but Nicky was a lot stronger-minded and could normally persuade Robin to do whatever he wanted. Robin was quite depressive, and Nicky thrived on that sort of thing. If he saw weakness in a person, he would sense blood and be all over them like a shark in the water.
I miss Robin, and I often think of him. We did heroin together the first time with King's friend Smog Vomit from a band called Tex and the Horseheads. When I finally got away from junk, Robin went even further down than I did. He lost it all and ended up homeless, divorced, and bankrupt. Eventually, he got AIDS from sharing needles with squatters in L.A., and I was going to lose one of my best friends in the world. It wasn't AIDS that took Robin from me, or any of us for that matter. It was heroin. He had changed so much that I had to cut him out of my life. I let him stay at my house in 1990 with the understanding that there were to be no drugs in my house. I had young children, and I was clean and sober. One day when he was out of the house, I went into the guest room and saw he had a crumpled brown paper bag in there. It looked all too familiar to me, so I opened it, and there were needles and spoons and the usual stuff we used to kill ourselves. I had to ask him to leave. That was a sad day for both of us. I remember crying as he drove away. I never saw him again. A few weeks later, he called and asked me to borrow $10,000 so he could get out of debt and back on his feet. I told him I loved him, and he was one of my best friends in the world, but being a former junkie myself, I knew where the money would go, and I felt I would be killing him rather than saving him. I told him if he would get 90 days sober, I would give him the money in a heartbeat. He told me to fuck off and hung up on me. It broke my heart because I knew he didn't mean it. I was so heartbroken I couldn't even go to his funeral. I still feel guilty to this day. Like maybe I could have done more.
Ross Halfen. Robin wasn't as mentally strong as Nicky and couldn't handle smack like Nicky did. I remember once walking down the street in L.A. and Robin was literally sitting on the street begging. It was boiling hot, but he was sheet white and his feet were all blue and blistered. Robin eventually caught HIV from needles and died of AIDS.
11:40 a.m. Just got off the phone with Doug. I told him Doc is on his last legs with the band. He told me I'm overreacting and we got in a big fight. Doug is such a nuts and bolts manager, the day-to-day guy, but Doc holds us all back, including Doug. He never follows up on any of our ideas or visions. He's here to massage the label and get our ideas to become real, but he is so busy bragging, spending money, playing golf, that he can't see the future. Well, I can see the future very clearly, and it doesn't involve him. I give him 6 months, if that. I need a manager who is into technology and marketing. Maybe one doesn't exist. I want more from a manager. People think I'm a control freak, but I just want the best for us. I want us to be the biggest band in the world and to break all the rules. I feel if I don't push, we won't do anything different from any other fucking band. Okay, enough from me. Gonna go jump on King's bed and wake his lazy ass up and then run.
Alan Kovac. I first met Nicky in 1985 when he was dating Lita Ford and he was an angry punk who didn't care what anybody's opinion was. But I liked him. Underneath it all was a person whose eyes and smile showed he had character and who wanted to understand the business side as well as grow as an artist. I wanted to manage Motley Crue, which I eventually did, largely because both Nicky and Tommy had a real exuberance and wanted to learn.
Salt Palace, Salt Lake City, Utah. September 30th, 1987, on the jet, 2:30 a.m. King just looked at me and said, "Wow, this doesn't suck." I had the waitress bring him a line on a silver platter with his own bottle of champagne. Fresh tacos and chips for everyone except Vince, who had his usual tuna sandwich. The show was cool, but the altitude just kills you here. It doesn't matter how good a shape you're in. Mick asked King to jam with us in Salt Lake. That'll be fun. Tom's coming in tomorrow. We should be there in about an hour. Today, I'm happy. Hotel, Salt Lake City, 12:30 p.m. Tom's coming in today to hang out. I'll have my grandfather and King with me. Sort of like the dad and brother I never had. The girls in Salt Lake are so beautiful. This is a town of suppressed people raised with a religious iron fist and sexual repression. So, need I tell you, diary, of the fucking debauchery that comes from this mixture of Motley Crue and Mormon girls. After the show, I'm flying back to L.A. in the Motley jet, and I don't know why. I need a girlfriend, a nice, normal girl. Where is she? Maybe I'll find her tonight. October 1987. Drugs make it better. Drugs make it worse. October 1st, 1987. Day off. Van Nuys. Noon. Home sweet home. Just woke up. Flew in from Salt Lake City last night. Robin flew with us and Tom stayed, then drove back home. The flight was smooth and the sky was so gorgeous. Our pilot would tip the plane to the left, and you could see the stars so clear that we even saw a shooting star. Then he would tip to the right, and you could see the arc of the earth with spotted lights from little suburbs as we were getting close to L.A. It feels like an electric tomb. I sometimes wonder if I will ever get out of here alive. Karen's gone to stay with friends while I'm back home. She says she feels weird being here while I'm here, but I wish she would stick around. It might stop me from going crazy. 1:30 p.m. Abdul has a friend who sells rock. I had an ounce cooked up and brought over. He'll be here in a while. I'm depressed. I don't know why. I can't get out of this place in my head. I can't shake it off. Drugs make it better and drugs make it worse. Every time I'm going to stop, I get the itch. 3:45 p.m. Oh, my God. I As soon as I got the rock and hit the pipe, I thought my heart was going to jump out of my chest. The whole house started shaking, rolling, and shit was falling off the walls, threw me to the ground, and I realized we were having an earthquake. I didn't know what to do, so I ran outside, pipe in hand, and the door locked itself behind me. I was naked and had to run around to the back of the house and break the window to get in. Then the alarm went off and the security company called. Days like this, I wish I didn't get out of bed. 5 p.m. Flushed the Coke in case there's another earthquake. I don't think my heart can take it. I took a few pills, and I'm starting to get tired. We have a show in San Diego, and I don't want to get any more Coke. I'm going to go play my guitar and lay in bed until I fall out.
Ian Gittins. The Los Angeles earthquake of October 1st, 1987 measured 5.9 on the Richter scale. It killed 8 people, injured scores more, and left 2,200 people homeless and more than 10,000 buildings badly damaged. However, Nikki Sixx was by far the most infamous Los Angelino to react to the quake by running out of his house butt naked and waving a crack pipe.
Sports Arena, San Diego, California. October 2nd, 1987. Van Nuys, 10 a.m. Wow, I just woke up. I slept 16 hours straight. I'm starving. I don't think I ate yesterday at all. I'm going to jump on my bike, go grab some Mexican food down the street before I leave for San Diego. I had a dream. I was a kid and playing with my father. I was so happy, and then he just faded away right before my eyes. I was alone in the middle of the street looking for him frantically. That's the feeling I feel inside a lot. 12:30 p.m. I'm going to drive down to San Diego with Robin. He's on his way over now. After being in his Ferrari, I'm thinking about getting one. Not that I'll ever be home to drive it. October 3rd, 1987. Day off. Van Nuys. 1:10 p.m. I had the next few days off, had a pretty good show in San Diego. Lots of people from L.A. came down. It's easier to say hi and hang out in San Diego rather than L.A. The Forum is always a zoo. Someone said the record company was there, but the band didn't want to talk to them. Fuck them. I'm going to go to a movie with Bob. I need a normal night out. I'm over being me. Even writing in this diary is boring to me because it's all about me. October 4th, 1987, day off, Van Nuys, 10:30 a.m. Went to a movie last night with Bob and came home, played guitar until about 1 a.m. No visitors, no phone calls, perfect night. Wrote some really cool songs. Noon. Gonna go get the car and Jeep washed. It's pretty outside. I might lie in the sun. Ricky might come over, and Pete spoke to Slash. He's as excited as I am to have Guns tour with us. Power to the music. Who said music's dead in the street? Don't know what they're talking about. They got to put a bullet in my head. They want to keep me down. Great Western Forum, Los Angeles, California. October 6th, 1987, 10:15 a.m. Sitting outside drinking coffee and playing guitar. What a nice day here in L.A. Today, I'm happy. Days like today, I reflect a lot. It seems like a lifetime ago when this was just a dream. Yesterday was another safe and sane day. My problem is when I'm not doing drugs and drinking, I'm actually happier till the boredom kicks in. Then there's this little demon in my head that says, come on, just one. And I lose all control. This road has an end. I just don't know where it is. 2 p.m. I'm going to ride my Harley to the Forum. I'm going to go early and go up by the beach. It doesn't get much better than riding your bike up the coast to the first of two sold-out hometown shows. I've got Memory Motel by the Rolling Stones running through my mind over and over. 3:30 p.m. I'm sitting on the side of the road looking out over the ocean. I'm glad I brought my diary along. It's too beautiful not to stop and take it all in and even try to write it down. I know she's out there, my soulmate. Of course, they say if you're looking, you're never going to find whatever it is you're looking for. For now, I'm just looking out over these rolling waves and being reminded how small I am. Better go or I'll miss my own show. 7:30 p.m. Backstage. I just got out of the back of a cop car. I was riding my bike, and as soon as I pull up to the show, this cop pulled me over. I told him I was playing a show, and he said he didn't care. I was speeding, and he wanted to see my license. I told him I don't have one, and he said I was going to jail. I said if I wasn't on stage in about an hour, there would be a riot, and he said he didn't care. So I told him to fuck off, and he arrested me. Doc came out, talked the cop out of it, and I had to apologize. How demoralizing to apologize to that fuckhead. But I bit my tongue and said sorry. I'm sure he wanted to kick my ass like the cops did outside the whiskey years ago. I gotta get ready. Time for a shot of JD, then kick LA's ass today and tomorrow. Grand Western Forum, Los Angeles, California, October 7th, 1987. No entry. Long Beach Arena, Long Beach, California, October 8th, 11:45 a.m. Yesterday was a nightmare. Probably the worst day of my life next to Nona dying. Vanity showed up at my house after the first forum show with a baseball bass. I stayed up all night and day until showtime the next day. They had to send a car to get me, and when I got to the forum yesterday for our second show, I was so frazzled I couldn't even talk. I hid in the dressing room, fearing my heart would explode until it was time to go on. I had to snort about a quarter gram blow to get on stage. I truly thought I was going to die on stage last night. What is wrong with me? Why can't I say no to drugs? They haunt me. Or hunt me. P.S. I should be the happiest man in the world. My dreams have come true. I need to quit. This is killing me. Vanity's killing me. Drugs are killing me. Or am I already dead? I won't make another year. I know it. This was the beginning of the end. I knew I was either going to die or get sober. I knew how to die. By then, I had many secret overdoses and seizures, so I understood where the line was, and I was just inches from crossing it. The dying would be easy. It was the living that I didn't know if I could do. October 9th, 1987. Day off. Van Nuys, 7 p.m. I've just been hiding all day under my sheets. I won't answer the phone, no TV, no music, just me and my 357 on my bedside table. It seems to be talking to me in a whisper. I know it seems dramatic, but you're not inside my head. I feel like I need to check into a nut house. I know it's only a matter of time until I die. The question isn't how anymore, it's when. Oakland Stadium, Oakland, California. October 10th, 1987, Van Nuys, 4 p.m. I haven't been asleep in 48 hours. I don't think I can make the show. I can't even write. My hands are shaking so bad. I keep hearing voices every time I hit the pipe. Then I come down and nobody's there. I'm losing it. I need some dope to come down and nobody is around. All I have is coke. No booze, nothing. Not even one fucking pill. I'm just not going to answer the door or the phone. I can't do it. I'm too paranoid. I can't face people. Fuck. What am I going to do? There's a sold-out stadium waiting, and I'm dying here, and nobody really gives a fuck. Neither do I. I wish I could die. I'm going to take a hot shower and lay in bed. Maybe I'll fall asleep. Yeah, right. I'm so fucked. Lyric. Take me to the top. Take me to the top and throw me off. October 11th, 1987. Van Nuys, 2:30 p.m., day off. Yesterday was as low as I've gone. I hadn't slept in days and was so based out I missed the Motley Jet. Actually, I didn't miss shit. I just never showed up. Doc had a jet sent for me to take me to Oakland Stadium. I was out of my mind. I was so fucking coked out. I felt like I was going to have a heart attack. When I got there, there was a band meeting, and they all asked me if I'd been shooting up. They wanted to see my arms. Thank God I was freebasing. No traces except for the insanity. I finally made it on stage and went home right after the show. Everyone is pissed at me. And you know what? Fuck them. I'm sick of this fucking band. On top of that bullshit, my stomach has really been killing me lately. There are traces of blood again every time I take a shit. This always happens when I'm drinking too much or up the drugs. I guess after a while that shit tears my guts open. Problem is, I haven't been drinking as much as doing drugs. Maybe my insides are coming out.
Tommy Lee, Oakland Stadium was the point we all realized Nicky's shit was getting really bad. When he didn't make the flight, we all started freaking out and saying, fuck, we're playing a stadium tonight. This isn't just an arena or a club. Dude, that would have been the worst no-show of all. Six had to get a later flight, and when he turned up, he just looked like shit. A lovely shade of gray. We asked to see his arms, and of course they were a mess. But we never thought to go as far as asking Nicky to leave the band. The truth was we were all fucking around with shit, so we were in no position to bust his balls about it. Vince Neil. Playing Oakland Stadium was a real big prestigious deal, and there was Nicky fucking it all up for us. There were a lot of people depending on us, and when he didn't show, I thought it just wasn't going to happen. I was just glad we got through the show, but I have no idea how Nicky managed to do it.
Van Nuys, 4 p.m. I forgot to write down another of my stupid little mishaps. The other night, I fell and smashed the back of my head on the fireplace in the bedroom, and I probably only remember because my head is still pounding. My stomach and head are killing me. I feel like I'm slowly rotting away both physically and mentally. I was playing guitar last night, and I could barely make a chord. I was so fucked up. Painkillers, whiskey, cocaine, what a lovely life, right? Karen came back today. I opened the door to her, and it was all I could do to say hi. Then I just came straight back to my room. She must know how sick I am.
Karen Dumont. I was only ever in the house a few days when Nicky was there, and he hid things very well, but occasionally I'd see him really the worse for wear. He'd been foolish enough to tell me what he liked to do, close his bedroom door, go into his walk-in closet, and get ripped. He was so paranoid that all the doors had to be closed, so I insisted his bedroom door always had to be open, and if it wasn't, I'd bang on it and shout until he opened it. It used to scare me that Nicky had a gun.
Memorial Coliseum, Portland, Oregon. October 13th, 1987. Hotel, 4:30 p.m. Getting a weird vibe from the band. Either nobody wants to be around me, or they're trying to punish me for Oakland. And you know what? It's really pissing me off. We've all fucked up in this band. Vince killed someone. Tommy's fucked up 1,000 times. Mick is fucked up, too. And nobody has ever complained when we're all doing coke and junk all night. So I missed the jet. Fuck. I made the show. Now I'm the rock and roll scumbag of the band. Fuck them. Maybe I should just quit the band. Then they'd be fucked with no songs. Lyric. Without you. Without you, there's no change. My nights and days are gray. If I reached out and touched the rain, it wouldn't feel the same. Without you, I'd be lost. I'd slip down from the top. I'd slide down so low, girl, you'd never, never know. October 14th, 1987, Hotel, Tacoma, 2:45 p.m., day off. People, everywhere. There seems to be nowhere to hide, not even on the inside. Tacoma Dome, Tacoma, Washington, October 15th, 1987, backstage, 6 p.m. I can be such an asshole sometimes. My mom and sister came to the hotel yesterday, and I'd been up all night and all day, and was freaking out of my mind. I was in the middle of staring out of a peephole looking for people who were spying on me when my mom and sis knocked on the door and said, "Hi, Nikki, it's us. We're here to see you." I don't know why, but I completely lost my mind, calling them every name in the book and to fuck off, etc., etc. Between me and you, I don't know if it was the drugs talking or the shame of being so high on coke. I didn't want them to see me. My mom is coming to the show tonight. I'll try to make good. On the jet, midnight. I'm drunk, sitting on the jet leaving for Canada. My mom came to the show, and after she started in on me about the hotel, I lost it again. I had her thrown out of the building, called her a whore in front of everybody. I think in moments of confrontation, it all hits me how I was abandoned by her and my father, and it comes out in all sort of evil ways. My sister had no part in it, but somehow I've linked them together in my mind. I know I've made a lot of people uncomfortable tonight with all my screaming and breaking things, but I can't help how I act. I wish I could part with all this anger.
Cece Comer. My mother and I went down to meet Nikki in Tacoma. I had both boys with me. Jake was 2 years old and Caleb was just a baby. I had to pay for parking in the hotel garage, and it was all the money I had. First, there was a bunch of crap in the lobby. Nikki told me via the front desk to wait for 10 minutes, which turned into an hour. And when I finally got permission to go up to his room, I knocked on the door and Nikki asked, "Who is it?" I got pissed because he ought to know it was me, but I said, "Hey, it's Cece. I got the boys with me. Are you coming out?" And he just yelled really loud in a raspy voice, "Go away!" I was totally crushed and saw red. I went back home completely raw, just thinking, what an asshole. I felt scorned. Deanna Richards. Oh my God, this was so painful. We got to the desk and asked for Nikki. They told us what room he was in, so we called, but he didn't answer. So we went up to the room and kept knocking on the door. We could hear him in there, but he wouldn't come to the door. He just told us to go away. It's horrible. The whole day was like a horrible blur to me. Just so awful. It was like another night years earlier when Motley Crue was just getting big and Nikki invited me and Cece to a show at the Paramount Theater in Seattle. I was so glad and so excited to see him after all those years. Cece and I went backstage to talk to Nikki and I put my hand on his back and he just angrily shook it off and went out of the room. He went into the restroom with Cece and when I followed them in, he was taking cocaine. Just broke my heart. I asked him, "Nikki, what are you doing?" And he said, "I know exactly why you've come here. You want something from me. You want money." It shocked me so much because that was the last thing on my mind. So I left. And then I didn't see or hear from Nikki for a very, very long time.
Believing that I'd been abandoned by my father and later my mother had left me holding a garbage truck full of feelings and all that garbage had begun to stink. I didn't know how toxic it actually was at the time. When you think of storing stuff away, you usually think someday you may need it. But with feelings, it's different. You store it away, you forget about it, and then one day, like a serial killer that keeps all the dead bodies in his garage, something starts to stink. They say a dog is the first one to smell his own shit. I think a drug addict is the last. Lyric, on with the show. Frankie died just the other night. Some say it was suicide. Pacific Coliseum, Vancouver, Canada. October 16th, 1987, 7:30 p.m. Sitting backstage yesterday after the Seattle family massacre in Tacoma, I was having a few drinks with some girlies, and it seems they have some connection to fresh packs of needles, so I told them to join me in my room after the show. I snuck an OZ and 2 grams of Persian into Canada with me, but I told them to bring an 8-ball because I don't want to run out. I'm not going to let them know I have any dope. Fuck that. Bad news travels fast. I'm going to put some Mott the Hoople on the boombox and get into going on stage. My body is so tired, I feel like I could just lay down and die. tonight should be fun. One girl's name is Mouse. I don't know the others, or care. October 17th, 1987. Day off. Hotel, 3:50 p.m. Stood in front of the mirror today, and all I could see was death. I've lost so much weight, my skin is yellow, if not gray. My eyes are sunk into the back of my head, my smile's disappeared. I dress it up with leather and cover it with being defensive just to get through this hell. Ain't fame great? Anybody want some? 'Cause you're gonna have mine. I hate it. Northlands Coliseum, Edmonton, Canada. October 18th, 1987. Backstage, 6:05 p.m. Sitting here reading my own diaries, I'm really making myself sick. These drugs haunt me. These pages are an ongoing bitch fest. I'm smart enough to know these drugs and alcohol are killing me and my music. So why can't I get a hold of this? I dreamt my whole life about making music. I have every reason to be happy, yet I can't be. How do I get out of this downward spiral? I can't find a way out of this hole. I would like to say to myself, if you're in a hole, put down the shovel, but I can't. I'm so addicted. It's all I think about. But I know there's more. Is it the fact that I've never mourned not having a father? There is a reason, and I'm sure it's right in front of my face. I'm too proud to ask for help, but that's what I need. I have to get a grip. I have to quit. I feel like I'm rotting. In the mornings, when I wake, I can smell death on me. It's right around the corner, and unless I get out, I'm not going to make it. How do I stop? Do I have to go to rehab? Is there even a reason to live? It's insane that I have to ask myself that, but I sometimes wonder if anyone would miss me if I died. Would anybody even show up to my funeral? I shot up a lot of coke last night with Tommy. I mean a lot. My arms look like pin cushions. Have a show, then off to Calgary. Mouse and Lori, is that her name, are following us.
Tommy Lee. I think the time I finally figured out that Six and I were fucking crazy and had gone insane was in Canada when we ran out of heroin and cocaine and sat up all night shooting up Jack Daniels. Afterwards, I just thought, what the fuck was that all about? It didn't even occur to us that we could always just drink the JD. Bro, let me tell you, there was something seriously wrong with us.
Olympic Saddle Dome, Calgary, Canada. October 19th. 1987, 6:30 p.m. After yesterday's show, we flew here and I ended up shooting up all night by myself. I tried shooting up Halcyons too, whatever works. I got about 2 hours of sleep. I got to play a show, I'm going to order a few drinks and get out of here. I never even unpacked. October 20th, 1987, day off. Hotel, 5:20 p.m. Just woke up. I pulled another solo all-nighter. I'm actually out of coke. Those chicks Mouse and Lori have been with Tommy, and I know they got rigs and dope, but I said I wasn't doing anything and have holed up in my room. I feel so bored. Playing guitar is boring. Listening to music is boring. Fucking is boring. I'm boring. Doug Thaler asked me if I would consider rehab. At least he cares. I'm tired of touring and tired of the drugs, but I can't seem to get off either. Winnipeg Arena, Winnipeg, Canada. October 21st, 1987. Hotel, 5:30 a.m. Tonight's show was really tight, felt magical. Then afterwards, Tommy and Fred came back to my room. We sat drinking and doing lines. Zombie Dust was involved as well. I snuck outside and set fire to a door with lighter fluid and hairspray. I thought it was Rich Fisher's room. Set the fire alarms off and security came running up, but Fred managed to turn it around, so it was their fucking fault. Tommy and I were listening behind the door, pissing ourselves laughing. Then an hour ago, Doug called and told me I could have burned the hotel down and there was some Chinese family in the room who were really freaked out. Shit, I was just fucking around. It's not like I really did catch the hotel on fire. Fucking bullshit. Now everybody's pissed at me. Again. Can anyone take a joke around here? P.S. I'm going to slow down. You wouldn't believe the blood. Off to Toronto now.
Fred Saunders. Nikki, Tommy, and I were sitting in Nikki's room, and he went to the bathroom, or so we thought. Instead, he'd gone outside, got lighter fluid, and poured it all over a room door and door jamb. He lit it, banged on the door, and ran off, so by the time the guy opened the door, it was fully ablaze. There was a young Chinese guy with his son in there. It could have killed them. Hotel security came up, and I started yelling at them that what the hell kind of hotel was this? I had a band to look after, and I didn't need somebody sneaking around trying to set fire to their rooms. They apologized to me. Nikki was hidden in his room, just niggering.
October 22nd, 1987. Hotel. Toronto, 7:15 p.m. Day off. Fucking hell. I need a day off. My hands are fucked up and cut up, as is my body from throwing myself around on stage. I have a pulled hamstring and my ankle's sprained. Who said rock and roll isn't physical, huh? Tonight, me and T are going to go to a club and then go and do radio around midnight. Breakfast is here. Gotta go. Hotel, 5:30 a.m. Drunk. Me and Tommy had a blast last night. We beat the fuck out of some jackass who mouthed off to Tommy. His name was Axel. At first, I thought we beat up Slash's singer, but it was some other guy. Then we went upstairs to this radio station. The DJ, Joe, was so fucking cool, but I think we got him fired. We had too much fun. Oh, well.
Joe Scaleri. In 1987, I was a 20-year-old DJ with a metal show on Q107 in Toronto. I called myself Joey Vendetta. The show ran every Friday from midnight to 2 a.m., and I was excited by the chance to talk to Motley Crue on the program. I was expecting to interview Vince and Mick, and no offense to them, but Nikki and Tommy were the guys you wanted to talk to. Tommy was banging Heather Locklear, and Nikki was banging everybody else. So I was thrilled when Nikki and Tommy walked in the studio, although I think they couldn't believe this young kid was the DJ. They had loads of people with them. Everybody was pretty wrecked. I remember Tommy had just had a fight in the club downstairs with some dude who had dissed Heather. We started the show, and I said, "Hi, I'm Joey Vendetta. Nikki and Tommy from Motley Crue are here, and we'll be talking to them after this." I put on a track from Girls, 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 and as soon as it started, Nikki handed me a bottle of Jack. It didn't take much to make me want to chug it. I was a 20-year-old being handed a bottle of Jack by Nikki Sixx, so I chugged half of it in one shot. I was hammered inside 2 minutes, and I just thought, I'm fucked. Then Nikki asked me if I'd ever had cocaine. I said no, and he said, "Well, you're starting tonight." He took out a bag, and it wasn't just a gram. You'd have needed a shovel to move it. He scooped some up with his little fingernail and put it under my nose, and I sniffed some up each nostril. I didn't know then that when you're drinking, cocaine helps to level you out, but in 30 seconds I went from Mr. Drunk to Mr. Super Confident. When the record ended, I started gabbing like Wolfman Jack on acid, talking 100 miles an hour. I started interviewing Nikki and Tommy, and every other word was fuck or bitch. We were talking like we were sitting in a bar somewhere, rather than on air. Nikki said, "Can we smoke this?" And so we were smoking hashish during the interview. Everybody could hear us going, shh, while we were talking. It wasn't too hard to figure out what was going on. Then Nikki got the blowout again, so the listeners could hear us smoking and snorting away. Suddenly Nikki said, "Let's play a game. Guess what we're doing? We can give away tickets to our shows." He grabbed a mic on a boom stand, pulled it toward his crotch, and turned to face a metal waste paper bin in the corner. He whipped his dick out and started pissing in it. There was no plastic bag in there, so it was really loud. People were phoning in and asking, "Are you running water?" And Nikki started screaming, "No, I'm pissing in a wastebasket." Then Tommy said, "Guess what I'm doing, Toronto?" And pulled his cock out and started banging it against the desk. I said, "There's no need to do that." But Tommy was saying, "Dude, just listen to the noise it makes." Meanwhile, people were calling in saying, "Is he banging his cock against the desk?" I decided to put people on the air, which was an incredibly stupid move. Our program director always told us to try to make the listener the star. Obviously, because I was drunk and high, I didn't do any pre-screening whatsoever, so the first call went like this. Caller. Hello, I'm Megan. Nikki. Hi, Megan, how old are you? Caller. I'm 12. Nikki. Oh, good, I like 12-year-olds. You get to hear the bones crack when you put it in. She just giggled. Thankfully, she had no idea what he was talking about. When Nikki and Tommy and all the hangers-on left, I felt exhausted, like a hooker who'd been fucked by everybody. As I cleaned up all the beer cans and Jack bottles, I realized that I might be fired on Monday, but I figured even if I was, I'd be a legend regardless. On Monday, I got called in by my program director. He told me to hold up my index finger on my right hand, which I did, and he asked me, "What does it do?" I said, "I don't know." And he said, "It hits the off button on the microphones. You're supposed to be the one in charge. Now get out." Motley Crue invited me to their dressing room at their Toronto gig, and Nikki and Tommy said it was the most fun they'd ever had on a radio interview. We got on really well. I wasn't tight with Vince or Mick. Mick always seemed like a real bummer, but now that I know how ill he was and what he had to put up with from those retards Nikki and Tommy, I totally understand why.
October 23rd, 1987, Hotel, Toronto, 4 p.m., day off. Wow, 2 days off in a row. I have such a hangover. Some kid in this band last night told me and Tommy kicked in the doors of the venue here when we were sound checking on the Theater of Pain tour. I remember that. All the fans came rushing in. Then after we spoke for a bit, he went on stage with his band VO5. You should have seen these guys' hair. It was to the ceiling, but the little fucker could sing his balls off. He told me, "You just watch, I'm going to be a star someday." I told him, "Be careful what you wish for." Well, that kid got his dream. He later joined Skid Row and became Sebastian Bach. I always liked that kind of story. How often do we get to see someone get exactly what they wished for? Civic Center, Ottawa, Canada, October 24th, 1987, backstage, 4:30 p.m. Don't really feel like writing. Nothing new really going on. Doing pretty good. My track marks are healing. I got a little addicted up here in Canada, but I kicked it with sleeping pills. Nothing new to me. Tonight is going to be a good show, but tomorrow is Maple Leaf Gardens. How fucking cool is that? Sold out. Wish Nona could have seen this. October 26, 1987, Toronto, day off, 3:30 p.m. Last night's Maple Leaf Garden show was insane. We were so good. We're all looking at each other with big smiles. It felt like the old days. Another night in this hotel. Right now, I need two things, to get out of this hotel and to get out of this hotel. We've been here, it seems like a week. I basically moved in. I've duct taped the drapes shut, no housekeeping allowed in again. I have scarves on top of all the lamps. Room service trays are everywhere you look. And I have my New York Dolls poster above my bed. It's really quite nice in here, but it's time to go. The band wants to go visit the local strip club tonight. It's always like shooting fish in a barrel. P.S. I still haven't called home once. There's really no reason to. I'm sure Karen is fine, as long as the ghosts don't come crawling out of my closet. Random lyric, Poison Apples. Took a Greyhound bus down to Heart Attack and Vine with a fistful of dreams and dimes. So far out I didn't know I was in, had a taste for a life of slime. When push came to shove, the music was the drug, and the band always got to play. Sex, smack, rock and roll, mainline overdose, man, we lived it night and day. We loved our Mott the Hoople. It kept us all so enraged. And you love us, and you hate us, and you love us, because we're so fucking beautiful. The Forum, Montreal, Canada. October 27th, 1987. Hotel, Toronto, 1 p.m. Just got room service. I need to start to pack my room because they're coming for luggage at 1:30 p.m. Then we take the jet to Montreal, and after the show we fly to New York City. In the afternoon, we fly to Bermuda because we're doing an MTV contest there called Motley Cruise to Nowhere. Tonight is the last night with Whitesnake.
Ross Halfen. When Nicky fucked girls on the girls' tour, he did it pretty quietly because he wanted to get them off on their own to his room and do it with his drugs. The only exception was Montreal. There was a girl backstage after the show who was up for a gangbang and 43 of us did her. Tommy went first, Vince went second, I was third because, for some reason I forget now, Nicky wanted to be nice to me, then Nicky went fourth. The only person who didn't want to was Mick. That girl was okay, oddly enough, but there was also a repulsive Hell's Angel girl with a shaved vagina there. She had bad teeth, horrible tattoos, and a bullet belt. And I still have a picture of the tour manager, Rich Fisher, going down on her while Nicky watched, laughing. The fact that she was so awful appealed to Nicky. He always liked doing the worst thing imaginable, and normally, he did it.
To me, ugly has always been beautiful, and beauty usually turns out to be very ugly. When I was younger, I always hated my face. It was too sweet and innocent. No armor to protect the exposed nerves. That's one of the reasons I distorted it through makeup and theatrics later in life. When I take photographs, I'm attracted to documenting the darker, truer side of life or fantasy. Girls, back then, the sooner it was over, the sooner I could go off the deep end. What they looked like only interested me if they stood out from the crowd. A fucked up biker chick was more interesting to me than a model. Who they were was what interested me. Broken people attract broken people. I was like a guy getting ready to jump off a building without a net. The sooner I got the sex over with, the sooner I could hit the pavement and kill the pain. October 28, 1987, hotel, Bermuda, 8 p.m., day off. Just got into the hotel. Man, it's dead here. The bar isn't even open. Doc is here, keeps looking at me like he's expecting my head to spin around, spit green pea soup on him at any moment. When I say something, he laughs, but it's a nervous laugh, like a person waiting on impending doom. Maybe it's good. Managers need to live in fear. I'm going to watch TV. I know, weird. I snagged a sleeping pill from Fred so I can sleep. Last few days I've been eating like a horse. I guess my body needs some nutrition. I put it through the ringer in Canada.
Doc McGee. The Motley Cruise was a competition and the idea was that the winners had no idea where they were going. So we took them to the Bermuda Triangle. MTV was involved and on the first day I got a call from an MTV guy saying two of the competition winners were being held in customs. It was two guys. The customs officers had opened their luggage and found flying gear, girls' outfits, and dildos in there. I had to go down to customs to get them out. That evening, we had a welcome cocktail party and the two guys turned up in full drag. Tommy didn't realize and thought one of them was gorgeous. He told me, "Dude, she's fucking smoking." When I explained they were two guys, Motley didn't really want to be around them. Bizarrely, it turned out that one of them designed costumes for Motley and just happened to have won the competition. Doug Thaler. When Motley came back from Bermuda, they told me all about these two wild cross-dressing kids who were on the cruise. I later went on to manage one of those wild cross-dressers in a band called the Toilet Boys. By then, he was going by the name of Miss Guy.
October 29, 1987. Hotel, Bermuda, 2 p.m. Day off. Me, Tommy, and Fred got Vespas and rode around the island this morning. We wore our helmets backwards and acted like kamikaze pilots. I haven't laughed so hard in a long time. We took some pictures. I can't wait to get them developed. Okay, I gotta take a shower. It's been over a week and go to this boat for some contest or other. We fly home tomorrow. Gonna shoot a video for You're All I Need with Wayne. I promise not to let Sicky rear his ugly head. I can't wait to see my dog that I've hardly met.
Doc McGee. We all sailed out to an island for a limbo contest. I thought, I can never ask Motley Crue to limbo. They will fry my ass. But Vince is so fucking twisted in the head that he wanted to limbo. The contest was for couples only, and when Vince and Tommy went up to the gay guy in charge, who was called the King of Limbo, he said they couldn't do it. He had no idea who Motley Crue was. Vince started going crazy.